The Lord be with you. A reading from the Holy Gospel according to Luke. Jesus told his disciples a parable about the necessity for them to pray always without becoming weary. He said, "There was a judge in a certain town who neither feared God nor respected any human being. And a widow in that town used to come to him and say, 'Render a just decision for me against my adversary.' For a long time the judge was unwilling, but eventually he thought, 'While it is true that I neither fear God nor respect any human being, because this widow keeps bothering me, I shall deliver a just decision for her, lest she finally come and strike me.' The Lord said, 'Pay attention to what the dishonest judge says. Will God not then secure the rights of his chosen ones who call out to him day and night? Will he be slow to answer them? I tell you, he will see to it that justice is done for them speedily. But when the Son of Man comes, will he find faith on the earth?" The Gospel of the Lord. Jesus says, "When the Son of Man comes again, will he find any faith on the earth?" That's the most haunting question in the entire New Testament. When the Son of Man comes again, will he find any faith on the earth? Because, you know, the implied answer there is no. In the end of all things, when the great rivers of time spill into the vast ocean of eternity, Jesus is going to come back and he's going to discover by then things have gotten so bad that everybody abandons their faith. Very upsetting. Not the least of which when you consider the one who said it. But what's really upsetting about it is that it seems to contradict what Jesus said when he founded the church. Remember what he said when he founded the church on St. Peter? And he looked to St. Peter and he said, "You are a rock. And upon this rock I will build my church," and what? "And the gates of the netherworld will not prevail against it." You know, as a Catholic, that is a foundational promise that the church is not really of this world. And God has promised that it's going to last until the end of time. Of course, he never promised in what condition it would last until the end of time. It might be battered and beaten and greatly humiliated. Church might be much, much smaller when all things come to their inevitable conclusion. Who knows? Maybe when Jesus comes again, there will be so few people in the church that, you know, the entire Catholic Church, from the Pope right down to the last altar boy, could all fit comfortably in somebody's living room, but it's going to be here. So what does Jesus mean when he says, you know, when the Son of Man comes, is he going to find any faith on the earth? Well, understand this. He's not talking about the church as a generality. Church is going to be just fine. It's underwritten by a divine promise. But he is talking about you and me as individuals. The church is going to make it. He promised so, but he didn't make any such promise for you. And that means while we live, we have to fight to be faithful to the Lord. And it's hard. No sooner do you try to do the right thing, but that you feel you've entered into a battle. Half the time the battle's with yourself. You know you're supposed to do God's will, but you really don't feel like doing God's will. You'd rather do your own will instead. And you know you're supposed to do what's right, but you don't really want to do what's right. You want to do what's easy instead. And you know you're supposed to be virtuous, and you're supposed to be a good role model for everyone who's looking up to you, but you don't feel like it. Rather, you feel like doing what's easy and comfortable and profitable. And you know, the entire thing is a long, protracted, it's like the proverb said that. You set yourself to do God's work, prepare yourself for trials. It is a marvel to consider that God has created a creature who is capable of rejecting his creator. And that's exactly what he's done. The reason why I bring all this up is because I want to draw your attention to the first reading today. First reading comes to us from the book of Exodus, and if you heard the first reading, You know, that was a weird reading. I have my suspicions that lots of people who come to Mass on Sunday, they hear the first reading from the Old Testament, they just tune it out, because they're so used to it being strange, not making any sense. We're going to take a closer look at the first reading, because there's great, great lessons there. First reading from the book of Exodus tells us about a battle. It's a battle between Israel and the Amalekites. And it features Moses, who's up on top of a mountain praying, and Joshua, who's down in the valley fighting the fight on the ground. And Moses got his arms up like this. And as long as he has his arms up, Israel's winning the fight. But as soon as he puts his arms down, Israel loses the fight. And his arms get tired. So, you know, somebody comes up and holds his arms up so that Israel wins the fight. Strange, strange reading. But you know what St. John of the Cross once said? I'm paraphrasing him, of course, not exact quote. He said, "The stranger the reading, the more we have to learn from it." So let's take a closer look. The context is that it is a reading from the book of Exodus. And if you've heard me speak before, I've mentioned this. Exodus is a metaphor for our lives. Because Exodus tells the story of the Israelites trying to make their way to the promised land. They're coming from slavery, they're trying to get to the promised land, but they gotta pass through a desert to get there. It's a place of hardship, it's a place of deprivation, it's a place of difficulty. And so what do the Israelites do? They complain, complain, complain. They complain to God, they complain to Moses, they complain about the food, they complain about the conditions. Moses gets so upset trying to lead these people, he turns to God in prayer, and he says, "Lord, you know, if this is the way it's going to be, just do me the favor of ending my life right now." And they're trying to get to the promised land through this time of hardship, filled with bitterness and complaint. And we're not like that at all, are we? No, not in the slightest. But we're trying to get to a promised land too, aren't we? What's our promised land? Certainly not this place. Certainly not this earth. You know, good as it is, filled with all God's blessings, we weren't meant to be in this earth. We have a few lousy little years here, and nobody even knows how many years they have. But no matter how long your life is, it's still astonishingly short. You know this much. You weren't made to live forever here on this earth. What's our promised land? The kingdom of heaven. Trying to get from slavery to the promised land. And you know, we got to pass through a desert to get there. Set yourself to God's work, and it's hard. It's a place of hardship, it's a place of deprivation, and you're tempted to complain, and you're tempted to want to quit. And this is where our first reading is so helpful to us. Just as an aside, by the way, that metaphor from Exodus can be used for so many things. Whatever it is you're striving for in life, think of it as a promised land that you got to pass through a desert to get to. Maybe you want to lose 20 pounds. Maybe you want to learn how to play a musical instrument. Maybe you want to reconcile a fight, you know, and you got to get in there and straighten things up. Why doesn't everybody accomplish the goals that they set out to accomplish? Why doesn't everybody go out there and achieve their dreams? Why? Because it's hard. You got to pass through a desert, so to speak, to get there. And people want to quit. Well, here's where the first reading is so helpful. Because it tells us one of the fundamental lessons that we want to learn how to live with and be comfortable with as we try to follow in God's footsteps. Namely, if you want to follow in God's footsteps, you better be prepared to fight. It's not meant to be easy. It's not meant to be comfortable. Because consider this. No sooner do the Israelites leave slavery in Egypt, pass through the Red Sea, get the Ten Commandments from Moses on the top of the mountain. No sooner have they begun to make their way to the Promised Land where suddenly they have to fight. They're fighting the Amalekites. And just to let you know, they were a race of nomadic raiders who lived in the desert, considered the whole desert to be their own, and they were none too pleased that the Israelites were trying to pass through their territory. So as soon as the Israelites set foot in their territory, they started to fight. The Israelites weren't fighters. They were former slaves. The only thing they knew how to do was make bricks out of straw. But they learned to fight because they had no choice. They weren't going to get to the promised land riding together on a toboggan, shoes and stockings. It wasn't going to be a deluxe motor coach. And as it was for them, so it is for you and for me as well. No sooner do you set yourself to trying to do what's right, in whatever fashion that is, that you find yourself in a struggle. Listen, get used to it. Spiritual writers down through the centuries tell us the struggle takes place on three fronts. You've probably heard this before. He says it's the world, the flesh, and the devil. You heard that before? Let me explain what each one of those three things means. Try to do what's right, and the first front of your fight is the world. Now, what's meant by the world? What's meant by the world is bad example from everybody else. Makes it harder, doesn't it? I remember once I was in college, and there was this cafeteria, and you were supposed to go in the front and pay, get your food from the cafeteria. But you know what people did? They went out the back door, held the door open for their friends, let all their friends walk into the cafeteria without paying. And so many people did that, right, that if you refused to do that, people would turn to you and they'd say, "What's the matter with you? Everybody else is doing it." Well, that doesn't make it right, but it sure does make it harder to stand up for what's right. It's the first front when you try to do what's right. It's the front of the world. Bad example from everybody else. The second is the flesh. And that means that this body of yours, scarred as it is by original sin, doesn't want to do the right thing. It wants to do the wrong thing. It doesn't want to do the virtuous thing. It wants to do the easy thing. You've experienced this. It's easy to eat junk food and it's hard to eat healthy. It's easy to sleep in and it's hard to get up when your alarm goes off. It's easy to go along with the natural inclinations of the body in so many areas, but it causes so much hardship. It's the second front in any fight to do what's right. And you know what the third is, the most mysterious of all, is the devil. Because remember this, I don't care what anybody else says, remember this, there is a realm of spiritual creatures, invisible to the eye, created long before God created the heavens and the earth. That's the realm of the angels. Some of those angels rebelled against God. They fell. They became sworn enemies of God. And the moment you try to do what's right, the moment you try to go back to God, they fight you. They don't want you to come close to God because they hate God. And they don't want you to love God either. They fight you with confusion. They fight you with temptation. They fight you with internal turmoil. But the world, flesh, and the devil. If you want to make your way to God, you better be prepared to fight. Of course, if you want to, you can not fight. You can take it easy. But you'll always be a slave. You'll never become who God created you to be. You know what's interesting? The Israelites never had to fight until they left Egypt. Because when they were slaves, they never fought in the Egyptian army. And that makes sense when you think about it. Can you imagine the Egyptian army handing a bunch of sharp weapons and swords and spears to a whole bunch of slaves? They'd have an insurrection on their hands. They never had to fight, but gosh, it was easy. You don't have to fight either if you don't want to, but you'll always, always be a slave. Jesus said the one who lives in sin is a slave of sin. And if temptation comes along, you want to slide right on into it? I don't know. You make your choice. You live the kind of life you think you ought to live. You'll also never become who God created you to be. You know, almost like a sculptor with a hammer and chisel. It's only by hammer blows that God sculpts us into the creature that he made us with much resistance. If you want to go and take the path of least resistance in life, I guess you can do that. Certainly be easy. Abraham Lincoln once said, "A river takes the path of least resistance." That's why it's crooked. But as we make our way in this ongoing, very difficult battle on trying to get back to our homeland, our promised land, the first reading tells us there's two things that have to happen. We have to pray and we have to work. Two things, both necessary. Moses represents prayer. He's the one up on top of the mountains with his arms lifted up. Joshua represents work. And three things we need to learn about about prayer and about work that come from our first reading. Here's the first. Of the two, prayer is more important. It's counterintuitive. You think that your own effort is what makes, you know, all the difference, and God comes in and helps you a little bit. But look what the first reading said. Great spiritual truth in that. No matter how skilled Joshua was down on the ground fighting the fight, if Moses wasn't praying, Joshua was losing. No matter how good his weapons, no matter how great his skills, no matter how great his army. And I sure hope you're praying every day. I sure hope you're taking the time to pray every day, because if you are not, you are losing the spiritual fight. In fact, you don't even have a chance. Find the time, make it a priority. Of the two, prayer is more important. Here's the second. While we fight, we can only fight with the weapons that Jesus himself used on the cross. There's an image in that first reading. It's got Moses with his arms outstretched, doing his part in a spiritual fight. Can you name anybody else who fought a spiritual fight with his arms outstretched? Jesus on the cross. All the fathers of the church tell us that Moses is an image of Christ crucified. And you know, he doesn't lose battles. As long as we fight the way he fought, we always win. The temptation is that when we're trying to do good, that we think we can do evil to achieve it. You fight with the devil's weapons, you never win the fight. You can only fight with God's weapons. It's very hard to do, but that's the facts. I was talking to an exorcist once. He was giving us a priest conference. He told us that when he does exorcisms, there's two things he notices. First, the evil spirit lies and lies and lies. Jesus said he was a liar and a murderer from the beginning, and lying is his native speech. All he does is tell lies. And he says the second thing the evil spirit does is he fights dirty. He threatens, he accuses, he intimidates, strikes fear, sometimes even violence. Very tempting when we think we have a righteous cause to do evil or to lash out or to give somebody what they think they deserve. Remember once I was witnessing an argument and someone lashed out at the other and tried to justify himself. Two wrongs don't make it right, he said, but it darn sure makes it even. You can't think like that. The only weapons you can use are the ones the Lord used on the cross if you want to win the good fight. What weapons are those? Humility, prayer, patience, forgiveness, and a heck of a lot of perseverance. Which leads me to the last lesson that we learned from that reading. If you want to fight the good fight, you must persevere. I wish we could all go to heaven by putting in just one good day. Wouldn't that be great? It's one good day and we all get to go to heaven. The hardest lesson to learn is that you must persevere. I've heard it said that God's grace is like water. It's a pretty good image. Water always rushes to take the lowest place, very humble. And water appears to be weak, smashes up against the rock, and the rock appears to be the stronger. But water perseveres. Give it enough time, it can wash entire mountain ranges into the sea. The most mighty rock is reduced to nothing but dust and rubble because it perseveres. In our psalm response, we said, our help is in the name of the Lord who made heaven and earth, and God does not lose battles. Listen, it might be one of the most important lessons you can ever know. The grace of perseverance and the grace of salvation are the same grace. If you don't quit, you'll make it. So please learn that one and learn it well. Our Lord wants us to persevere. He knows how hard it is to fight this fight. He knows how easy it is to quit. He wants to encourage us to pray, to persevere, and never to lose heart. When the Son of Man comes again, will he find any faith on the earth? That question remains unanswered because the answer depends on you.